The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
In his new book, From the Outside, Rethinking Church Doctrine, religious writer, former Redemptorist Roman Catholic priest Tony Flannery, tries to discuss some aspects of the church that he disputes, including traditional notions of God, the lack of equality for women in the church, and the harmful negativity around sexual teachings inherent in Catholicism. And Tony joins me on the line. Tony, good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much, Pat. Incidentally, Pat, I'm not former. I'm still officially both a priest and a Redemptorist, just not allowed to practice.
Okay. Not allowed to practice. That was my first question, actually. I was going to ask you, should I refer to you as a former or current? So there you are.
That's been the case now for almost 9 years. Early 2010, 2012, they decided that what I was writing wasn't suitable. The Vatican decided, and from since then, I've not allowed to practice publicly as a priest.
Now, you do distinguish between the Vatican and the Pope a lot of the time because the Vatican is an institution, the Pope is an individual.
Yes, and I suppose when I talk about the Vatican, I'm talking particularly about that body called the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, the CDF, because they are the ones who are the policemen of orthodoxy. And see, what's going on in the Vatican at the moment, Pat, is there's an enormous power struggle going on between Francis and those who support him on the one hand, and the traditionalists on the other hand, who are a very powerful body within the Curia. So it's a strange place. And I think I got a recent document from them in the summer with four further statements that they wanted me to sign. And they were so way out, Pat, there was no way you could sign them. Think about women priests and homosexuality and same-sex marriage and stuff like that. And it seemed to me that at this stage, my case has got caught up in the power struggle in the Vatican. That's my reading.
So those statements that they wanted you to sign, were they statements committing you to silence on these issues, or were they statements demanding that adhere to particular stances on those issues?
Both, yeah, that I adhere to church doctrine as they define them. In other words, that I would accept that women could never be ordained priests, that I would accept all Catholic teaching, the official Catholic teaching on homosexuality, you know, the difficulties surrounding that, words like disordered state and intrinsic evil and things like that, and that I oppose same-sex marriage, stuff like that. And then even if I signed them, they would consider gradually reintroducing me to ministry. Now, Pat, I'm 73, so gradually is what doesn't sit too well at that age. And the condition would be that I would be silent, that I wouldn't speak or write on these issues anymore.
Now, the statement recently from Pope Francis that, you know, there should be civil provision for people who are in same-sex relationships. You know, people were saying, oh, the church is changing its teaching. Not quite so.
Not quite so. You see, Francis doesn't change teaching. He doesn't change doctrine. But what Francis does, and he has done it, I think, extremely well, he has changed the, what would you say, the mood or the attitude. What he did in that statement was that he acknowledged the humanity of homosexual people and that they were fully entitled to love and to relationships just as everybody else is. Now, that is an enormous step forward for a pope, I think. Now, I know that others would disagree and say, well, he still won't allow them to marry in the church. Okay, that's true. But I still think that was a great step forward by Francis. And you know what, Pat? Only one Irish bishop that I know of came out publicly in support of that statement. That was Dermot Martin, who's due to retire shortly. All the others, as far as I know, were totally silent, and I think that's a pity.
You talk about careerism in the church, that you know, people think of the Catholic Church as an organization, in theory, that is peopled by very holy men, and indeed in the convents by holy women. But you say, well, that may not be what propels a lot of them.
I don't think too many would believe that anymore, Pat, considering all the stuff that has come out in recent times. I lost my train of thought there for a moment.
No, it's the idea of careerism within the church, that you don't rock the boat if you want to do well.
Well, Francis, of course, has been constantly highlighting that. And in the book, I write a good bit about that, because one of the things I try to do in the book is I try to get to the root of the clerical sex abuse problem. Why exactly did that happen in the church? Why did so many priests abuse children? And one of the conclusions I came to that I've written about is that there is a sense of privilege involved in priesthood, a sense of superiority. In theological terms, it's called it when you're ordained, you have this ontological change. And now, a lot of priests ignore it and it doesn't affect them. But for certain type of personalities within the priesthood, it gives them this sense of superiority that they are above others, that they are a special breed of class in the church. And that's where the clericalism comes from. And it's a very destructive thing in the church, and I suppose that's why I'm saying in the book that a whole notion of priesthood needs to be rethought and, of course, opened up to others rather than just male celibates, and absolutely to women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the question of priests abusing children, be they boys or girls, I mean, it involves massive risk-taking on the one part, the conviction that you're not going to get caught. Also, we're told that paedophiles don't change their spots. Yeah. So I'm wondering, do you believe that as a result of entering the novitiates before there's a full maturity, that these priests were sexual predators and they would have preyed on any vulnerable sexual victim, whether it was a 22-year-old young man who was vulnerable or an 8-year-old boy who was vulnerable, or the same for females? Or are they, in other words, they're predators, or are they people who are paedophiles, born and will not change?
Some of them are, Pat. Some of them are paedophiles, and as such, insofar as we can understand it, that's the way they are and they won't change and they have to be controlled at all costs. I think, though, that there is another category of priests who have abused children. Now, it's hard to make this distinction, and I've got into trouble trying to make it before, but it has to do with the whole negativity of Catholic sexual teaching and the type of training my generation had in seminaries, that we grew up with a basic guilt about sexuality and our sexual nature, and that everything to do with sex was sinful. And the consequence of that for a lot of people is that they became sexually repressed. And we know very well now that when somebody's sexual nature is repressed, it can easily come out in perverted fashions. So that I think some of the abuse that was done by priests had to do with sexual repression and immaturity more than them being paedophiles. So that I would suggest that maybe for people like that, there is a possibility of change, but it's complex and it has to be handled very, very carefully.
Because, I mean, it's well documented by sex experts that if people get a taste for something, whether it's pornography or anything else, that it's very hard to go back to a more normal sexuality. By the way, just for our listeners to remind them, I'm talking to Tony Flannery from The Outside, Rethinking Church Doctrine here on News Talk. That's the book's title, and Tony Flannery is my guest. Now, the other aspect of your book about the doctrines that really need to be examining. The question, for example, of the Virgin Mary, in the Gospels there are references to Jesus' brothers. So,
four brothers and a number of sisters, quite clearly stated in the Gospels, yes.
Four brothers and a number of sisters.
And a number of sisters. It actually names the four brothers, but it doesn't name the sisters, and it doesn't specify how many of them. But they were there. And in a couple of instances in the Gospels, it talks about the family of Jesus. And you see, this notion of the virginity of Mary emerged at a later date, and it was part of the whole anti-woman, anti-sex mentality, which developed very, very strongly in the church around the third or fourth centuries. And they set up Mary as the perfect example of the virgin. But I wouldn't believe for a moment that she was a virgin, and I don't think it makes one bit of difference whether she was a virgin or not to our respect for Mary and our devotion to Mary. Both virginity and sexual love are equally blessed and important in my way of looking at things. So,
do you believe, though, Tony, that there is competition in world religion terms? We know that the attitude of certain Islamic groups, I mean, Islam comes in many, many, many forms, but some would seek to repress women far more than is acceptable in normal Western society. But there is, you know, the competition in terms of attitudes to women that you don't want to stray too far from what might be the norm in markets in which you want to grow.
Well, I suppose that is true, Pat. But on the other hand, I think that probably the biggest challenge at the moment facing the Catholic Church is the equality of women. And I think it's just going nowhere in terms of credibility in the modern world unless there is full equality for women in the Catholic Church. And that's why all this stuff about virginity, and that if we could free ourselves from that and see women as full, equal human beings, married or single or whatever state they are in, and give women full access to decision-making in the church, that really has to happen, and it has to happen soon. Like, there is no doubt that young women are leaving the church in droves because of the attitude of the church to women.
Now, the theology of, say, transubstantiation, the body and blood of Christ being contained not in the wine and the host, but just in the host itself. In other words, blood is not liquid necessarily, and the body is not only made up of the host. It's all that sort of stuff. You believe that that should be looked at, really, because it does present a credibility obstacle for many people.
Yeah, I suppose that and other aspects of what the church has tried to do is it has tried to define everything. Whereas in the whole area of religious belief, we're dealing with mystery. In the whole area of God, we're dealing with mystery. And if you start defining things too rigidly and too closely, you actually destroy the mystery. So I'd be inclined to say, look, these ancient definitions that come from the 3rd and 4th and 5th century, if we could free ourselves from them and begin to find new ways of expressing what we all experience as a mystery. Like, I have no doubt, Pat, after however many 40 and more years celebrating Mass, I have no doubt that Jesus in some very powerful way is present. But he's present not just in the Mass, he's present in the whole of life. That would be part of my belief. But trying to define how he is present is utterly futile. So I don't like words like transubstantiation, and I wouldn't use them at all. And if people are listening to me saying he doesn't believe in the presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, I'm absolutely not saying that. I've no doubt about it because I've experienced it often and often in my own life in celebrating Mass. But please don't define it, because you kill the mystery of it when you start trying to define it. And that is not just about the Mass, that's about the nature of God. Like this defining of God as this being up in the skies, three persons, nice images, nice metaphors, but they don't explain God because we can't. So I suppose that's one of the basic things I'm saying in the book, Pash.
Did somebody say to you, Tony, sure, you're a Protestant, why not become properly a Protestant instead of remaining in the Roman Church?
Many people have said that to me. I know that, yes, I know that. But in contrast to that, a man I met some time back who just got the book and read it, a man of my own age, farmer, no theological background or anything, and he came to me, and the sentence he used, he said, look, Tony, he said, this is religion for adults. What we've had up to now was largely religion for children. Now, if you could ask for a compliment for a book, that was good. I know people say, go off and form your own church, go off and join a Protestant church. I won't. I'm born and reared, and Catholicism is in my bones. Do you know what, Pat? My brother died early, a week ago, and I was allowed to celebrate the funeral mass last Monday. Now, it was the first time I'd been on an altar in 8 or 9 years. And I wasn't 2 minutes up there till I felt totally at home and this is where I belonged. It actually threw me. I was so surprised at how quickly. So in that sense, it's in my bread, my bones, and I'll be a Catholic till the day I die.
One of our News Talk texters says, we take our own bit of Catholicism and make it work for us. It's time for the church to move on with the people who want to be a part of it. The idea that it used to be called, probably still is, a la carte Catholicism, and the church railed against that idea. They said, look, you know, if you want to be part of us, you've got to obey the rules.
And I'd go with that, Pat. Religion that involves just following a rigid set of rules isn't really a belief at all. And as I said already, it just kills the whole mystery and the wonder of it. So I suppose I'd be all in favour of a la carte religion in that sense, yes.
Yeah. Finally, I suppose that those who would argue with you might say, look, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, that's on the one hand. And then another News Talk texter, many of them saying, you know, every organisation has to modernise or die. And why can't the church do the same?
That's right, yes. And I would say to the people who would say to me, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, I'd say that the church is making a fair shot at doing that at the moment, the way it's behaving and the way we're reading about people like Cardinal McCarrick and the various other people at the upper levels of the church who have the most appalling attitudes and indeed behaviour. And the whole clerical sex abuse thing, like a lot of the baby has been thrown out of the bathwater in the last 25, 30 years. And what people, myself and people like me, are trying to do is say, look, let's start thinking of redesigning necessary things in the church to make it more meaningful and to make it more of a vehicle for the message of the Gospels, because that's the only justification for the church. And clearly, at present, Pat, it's doing a very poor job at getting across the message of the Gospel because it has lost so much credibility. So in my book, I'm hoping to just do a little bit in moving the church towards an institution that will better serve its only purpose.
Well, the book is called From the Outside, Rethinking Church Doctrine. It's available now to buy for about €15. And its author, Tony Flannery, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.